Mr. Speaker, this week marked the one-year anniversary of American efforts to drive al-Qaeda from Afghanistan and liberate the Afghan people from the Taliban. We've already learned important lessons from that conflict. First, we reaffirmed that the men and women of America's armed forces are strong and that they're courageous. Second, we saw the benefits of acting with regional partners and other friends united behind us. And third, we continue to see every day the long-term commitment required to help a society transition from a ruthless dictatorship to a more representative government. The way we fought in Afghanistan offers important lessons as we now confront the threat posed by Saddam Hussein and his weapons of mass destruction. He's a menace to his people and to the entire region, but his weapons of mass destruction that pose the most significant risk, and it's because of these weapons that we must today authorize the president to act, including with military force. In saying that, I'm not accepting the administration's line uncritically. The first resolution submitted to Congress by the president was patently unacceptable. It would have allowed the use of force not just against Iraq, but throughout the region. It did not link the authorization in any way to the essential negotiations now occurring within the United Nations Security Council. Critically, in my mind, the resolution also didn't address the broader implications of action. The administration has said that the risk posed by Saddam is too great to do nothing, but this risk must be balanced against the long-term risk of reckless or ill-considered action. On September the 4th, Mr. Speaker, before the original resolution was submitted to Congress, I drafted a letter to the President asking three critical questions. First, how would we manage Iraq's transition to a stable post-Saddam regime? Second, how can we ensure that action in Iraq does not undermine international support for the broader war on terrorism? And third, how can we ensure that the United States military can still execute its other missions? The resolution originally sent to Congress offered no means to ensure that these questions were answered. Through meetings with and hearings by the Armed Services Committee, in private conversations, I have discussed these issues with the White House, the Defense Department, the State Department, the Central Command, and numerous retired senior officers and foreign policy experts. What chilled me were the implications of getting the long-term implications wrong. If we act without international support, we risk losing support for the broader war on terrorism, and as well as our credibility as a global leader. If we do not immediately plan for the post-Saddam transition, we risk fueling resentment and creating anarchy that could destabilize the Middle East and create legions of new terrorists. In the history books, Mr. Speaker, this resolution will constitute only a footnote, and any conflict with Iraq will constitute but a paragraph. But Iraq's future beyond Saddam and the role we play in its transition will fill a chapter as its implications cascade far beyond Iraq to the rest of the region. That's why with John Spratt, I drafted a resolution that would deal with all these points. Through the leadership of Dick Gephardt and others, the resolution now before us incorporates almost all of them. This resolution authorizes the use of force, but strongly supports the President's efforts to work through and with the United Nations to enforce its resolutions and to force Iraq's compliance with them. It expresses a strong desire to work multilaterally, but reserves the right to act alone if we must. It requires certifications before force can be used, that diplomatic efforts will not achieve the goal of Iraqi compliance, and that actions entailing military force will be consistent with the global war on terrorism. And finally, the resolution requires the President to report to Congress both on the conduct of any military action and on what comes next. This is not a perfect resolution, But it's a resolution that simultaneously supports the United Nations and our men and women in uniform who every day risk their lives to defend our national security. It makes clear to Saddam Hussein that we will work with our friends and with our allies, but that his efforts to blackmail the world with weapons of mass destruction will not succeed. So, Mr. Speaker, it is with heavy heart, great hope, and mindful of the responsibilities borne by Congress alone, that I urge my colleagues to support this resolution.